let's just get right into it. Like basic gist of just give the people a quick background yourself, like where are you from?
Where am I from? All right, I'm from Sudan. Okay. My name is Mohammed Karad. I got you. Yeah. My name is Mohammed Karad. I was actually born in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, but I never really lived there. Then I moved to Khartoum. I moved to Bahri. So I was raised. I was raised in Bahri up until I got a little bit older. I moved to Khartoum, and then I went throughout. There all throughout until eighth grade, then I moved to Iowa, and then I also did eighth grade in Iowa, then graduated Iowa City West High, and then I go to university now.
Also, another thing I want to ask you is I always like to kind of speak a little bit about their background, because I just have a belief that your upbringing really does kind of do a lot in shaping you into who you are today. So just kind of curiosity, what was your childhood like? Were there any experiences that you think personally kind of shaped you to be who you are today? Whether it was like learning certain lessons from parents or just, you know, friends or something like that?
I think just growing up in Sudan, like, it's a lot different than here. And, you know, there are good sides and bad sides to each way. Like, for example, like, I noticed that people that grew up here, they're much more, you know, they plan a little bit more and stuff. In Sudan, it's a little bit more spontaneous, you know, which can be good in some situations, and at some other situations, you know, like, it's not as good. And then growing up in Sudan also makes you really social, just because, you know, you live with like a lot of family, one big house, everybody knows each other, like, all they love to do is, you know, hang out, kick it, you know, like, shy, like a ziyarat, like, there's always something going. So that's what it really teaches you. It teaches you a lot about community, stuff like that. And then I think that definitely helped a lot now that I grew up, and now that I am, you know, trying to enter the professional space. You know, the buzzword is like networking, right? Building connections and stuff like that. And I think having that upbringing where you're always meeting people and stuff, it becomes very natural to you. That definitely does help with like the networking aspect, I think. But on the discipline side of things in Sudan, like, things are a little bit looser down there. People don't really stick to plans as rigidly as people here do. So definitely discipline was something that I have to work on myself, and I still have to work on, as opposed to people that have grown up here.
What career did you kind of see yourself going to as a kid? Like, what did you dream of doing?
What did I dream? Oh, man. So I love cars, and I used to watch Top Gear a lot. I still watch Top Gear, to be honest. And my dream job was, I really wanted to be a Top Gear show host. You know, they go on like their little adventures and beat up cars, and they just break down in the middle of nowhere and try to fix it, you know, drive across like Africa or something.
If it's changed, how's that dream kind of changed? And what were your experiences like with school? Is there any like particular experiences you had at school that kind of maybe changed it, or was it things outside of school?
Maybe changed. Things definitely changed. My goals are a lot different than when I was 8 years old. But it changes every year. I would say that it's more of a scope, and it starts as a wide scope, and then I narrow in the more I learn about myself. Right? Introspection is key when you're trying to find out your goals, what you want, what you don't like. And a lot of times, you know, people try to find what they like. It's very hard to find out, you know, what you like. There's just so many options. But you do find a lot of things you don't like. And obviously you need a lot of things you don't like to find the one thing that you do like. So you just start knocking things out, and then that scope starts to narrow down. You start to eliminate things. So when I first started college, you know, I just wanted to be a regular, you know, engineer, you know, like a conventional job, probably go to like, you know, like any good engineering job, manufacturing, or like something close like Rockwell Collins, John Deere. And I really wanted to do that. And then I had an internship with Eaton doing manufacturing. And it turns out it was not for me, right? You know, some other interns loved it, and I couldn't do it. I was not having a good time. And the reason was that I realized I don't like jobs that stay similar a lot of times. I like jobs that are very dynamic, that change, so like that have a little bit more.
What made you have that realization? Was there like a particular experience, or was it just kind of something overall? Or
yeah. That type of thinking. Yeah, so the nature of the internship was, or just the nature of the manufacturing scene that I was in. So they were manufacturing aerospace parts, and these parts were designed in like the 90s, right? And these designs, they never change. So all you have to do is, you make sure that everything is up to specification, right? It's built right, quality is good, ship it on time, and then repeat, right? And then you start again. Some people are like, like over the years you get really good at it, so you do it really fast. You do it better and stuff. And then to me, that was just kind of too static, right? Like, yes, there is change. Yes, you do it better every time, but the challenge was the same. And then I didn't like that. I want something that changes, right? And so after that, I was like, okay, I'll try consulting. Right? I want to do consulting. That's what I want to do. And then you do it, and then you find some things you don't like, and you start fine-tuning it.
What was it in particular prior to coming to college that kind of made you say engineering's the route for me? And how did you find yourself to where you're at the University of Iowa right now? You mentioned that you started originally in California.
So engineering, like I said, I love Top Gear. I just love cars in general. I still love cars in general. And naturally that led me to gravitate towards engineering. Even at West, we went to West High, we had like Project Lead the Way, like Principles of Engineering. Like, I love that. I really enjoyed that. And so I knew engineering was something I wanted to do. And even if I wasn't sure if I wanted engineering as a career, I definitely wanted to have the kind of engineering knowledge, the kind of analytical skills that engineers have. Like, we do truly think in a different way about a lot of things. I mean, when you're just walking around about, during your day and you look at stuff, you just be like pondering like the engineering behind it. And I love that. I really like that I have, that skill to do that and things like that. And then but when I graduated high school, I really wanted to have an education that, with a lot of colleges, you feel like they're pre-professional, right? Like, you go and it's like a business school or like an engineering school, or like it just feels like pre-professional. Like, all it does is preparing you for a professional career. So I wanted to do, I actually wanted to do a dual degree program where it was like going to a liberal arts college for 3 years and then going to an engineering college for 2 years so that, I could get like more culture and like things of that nature that just increase the quality of life, like knowledge that, for me, not for my profession. And then I did go to a university in California. It's called the University of Redlands. And it was like that kind of culture aspect for it. I went for 1 year, and then after that I realized a lot more of what I wanted to do, and the things I like. And then low-key money was a little bit tight. It's kind of expensive out there. So then I transferred to the University of Iowa my sophomore year, and I started out with mechanical engineering. And then after having that internship in manufacturing, I decided to switch to industrial engineering. And I have never looked back since then. I love my major now.
There's like a lot of college students say that necessarily when coming to college, they don't necessarily have that set idea of, okay, I'm for sure doing this coming in off the bat. And you mentioned there can be a lot of options. Sometimes it can be a little overwhelming. What advice would you have for someone that's necessarily in that position that they feel like there's a lot of options, they don't even know necessarily where to start?
There's a lot of options. Yeah, I think there's introspection. Like, always ask yourself questions, right? Like, always really ask yourself questions. And sometimes it can get uncomfortable, right? You're like, I'm so set on this major. I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna do this. I already have credits towards this major. But really ask yourself the hard questions, like, is this for me? Like, is this what I want to do? And then when you ask yourself these questions, make sure that you go in with the intention of accountability. Like, hold yourself accountable. Don't be like, man, like, you know what, I'm already this far. I don't, I'm not gonna question it. Like, this is good enough, right? Good enough is a, we call it heuristic. And that's really, heuristic is something that's just good enough. But I would say don't settle and really ask yourself the hard question if you're not satisfied. And if you don't know what the alternative is, that's fine too, right? Like, that's the hard part about it. That's fine too. Like, don't know the alternative, but know what you don't like and try to replace it.
And just necessarily keep trying until you find that one thing.
Yeah.
When you were moving from Cali, Iowa, were you kind of scared to make that transition at all?
No, I was excited. I was really excited. They didn't have a Nesby chapter at the university I was at, so I used to have to go to like other campuses, And like Nesby since high school, like, my older sister did it. Just people I looked up to were always in Nesby, and I was like, man, Nesby, like, Nesby. So moving to Iowa, I was like, I'm gonna get so involved in Nesby. I can't wait to do it. I was pretty excited.
How has Nesby made an impact for you, like holistically, whether it's just school or you just as a person or connecting with others, making friends, all that?
Nesby definitely, it gives me the confidence. It's like it gives you the confidence, and not only does it give you the confidence, it gives you the access. Like a lot of the things that I was really interested in, like, when I had the manufacturing internship, I got that from our university's career fair. And a lot of the engineering career fair, a lot of the companies are follow similar function. So when I was interested in something like, consulting, wanting to do things that are strategic and like business and stuff like that, a lot of these companies didn't come to our own career fair because, we had like a certain type of, it's like a certain type of like niche that just doesn't, they just don't come to Iowa because not a lot of them are interested from the university. And my interest did differ a little bit from that. So Nesby, when it offers you access, like it offers you access to pretty much everything. Like it's not bound by region, or anything like that, and it's a much larger network. And then, there's like in Nesby, like you see the example, right? Like it's an example that looks like they probably went through a lot of similar things, and then you see them actually doing it, right? So that gives you the encouragement. And after you see them doing it, they give you the access. You start meeting these people, you start talking to people in the positions that you want to be in, and they help you. They really help you.
And a question I was just curious to you. So you're the president of Iowa University of Iowa, and like me, also as the president at ISU. I was just kind of curious. So you mentioned having being able to see that example, and now as president, you're the one where you serve as that example, and on top of that, you have to lead. Out of curiosity, what's the most challenging part about that for you personally?
About being president.
Yeah. So like now you're in a position where, like you mentioned, of it's great to be that example. Like you're that example for your chapter as well as in your position to lead now.
Oh
I
yeah.
could also okay, curious what has been the most challenging part about that, and how you able to kind of overcome that adversity right there.
Okay. So the hardest part about being president. So there's a lot of things that I loved about it, right? I was like, this, that's like this is what I love about Nesby, and I knew what I loved about Nesby, right? And I loved it so much that I really wanted to offer it to other people, right? And then becoming president, naturally, the things I love, I found myself kind of pushing it on the people. But with time, you realize that not everyone wants what you want. People have people have different needs and wants. And I was like, man, this really worked for me. This is great for me. So you should do it too. But with time, you realize that everyone is really different. Everyone has, a lot of like diverse interests, and you just can't, what works for you doesn't work for everyone. So that was kind of a challenge.
For sure, an adjustment for me too that like I struggle with. I was just kind of curious. As something I have asked other folks before me, as typically like the response most people that have, what typically or what was it for you that kind of gave you that perspective of okay, like maybe this is not right for everyone just because it worked for me, it wasn't right for everyone. Was there like particular conversations or experiences you had that got you to that point or?
Yeah, I think it's just a culmination over time. It's just, in the beginning, like in the very beginning of it, if there was something that really worked for me, right? Like an event that I attended or something like that. And I was like, man, this was life changing. This was great. I was excited before it. I was excited after it. So I'm gonna go, to this person that I think, would be a good fit for this event. And I would be like, hey, you should do this, you should do this. And then their reaction is not that excited. Right, so like it puzzles you a little bit. It's like I know what you want to be, and I know this will help you, but you're not that excited, right? So sometimes it feels like, you always want to give the benefit of the doubt, right? But sometimes you feel like, oh, like are you not interested because like you don't want to progress towards this? But they do. They obviously they like everybody wants to reach their goals, but not everyone has to go through the same thing. So yeah, that's how you realize over time when you start noticing.
You mentioned another crucial component for about Nesby is that having that access. Can you elaborate more on not just what it looks like being able to talk to these companies, but what is necessarily the importance of that for folks in our community?
Importance of that. Yes. Oh yeah. Access can be anything from like directly like thinking about when you're at the convention, you're actually talking to them face to face. Like that's direct access. If you talk to like a recruiter, for example, from the company that you like face to face, that is direct access. But also at the same time, just say like you're browsing LinkedIn, and you wanna like cold message a recruiter that you like, and they see that they're in Nesby. And like they see it on your LinkedIn profile that you're in Nesby and they happen to recruit from a Nesby conference or they know other people that have served as a good example, like it gives you a certain type of credibility, right? As opposed to if you're just someone that's, unaffiliated with anything. Giving Nesby is like, oh yeah, like I do know, like we had an intern from Nesby, or like this full-time person is from Nesby, or my friend was in Nesby, or I remember them during my college times that like, people in Nesby, they were doing a lot of things and they were being active. So it puts a certain image for you and that gives you.
Another thing too is with Nesby, it really does allow that level of access you're speaking of. And just out of curiosity, do you have any examples of where it served as that exact example you just gave, where like they saw previous folks they've had from Nesby, and they're like, oh, let's go recruit here. Like, how have you utilized the career fairs as well as your network to kind of navigate through that? Because sometimes just having access isn't enough, because for some of us, it could be very unfamiliar. I don't necessarily know how to navigate those areas because it's all new to us.
So you're asking how to leverage the access that you get from Nesby. I would say the first thing you want to start is from Nesby alumni, especially from your chapter, right? So a lot of the folks that have graduated before us, they've gone on to do great things, right? And they love Nesby just as much as we do. So if you hit them up like, hey, curious about this, I'm curious about that, they will really help you out because they were directly in your shoes. And they know, and like they themselves, someone from Nesby that graduated before them probably helped them get up there too. So they want to pass it forward, right? Usually it's the intention that they want to pass it forward. And then you can easily leverage that. And they are willing to, like they want people to help out and stuff. And they always reach back out. Like, hey, like, as president, you probably get a lot of emails from people that went to your Nesby chapter. They're like, hey, like, let the members know that, we have this and this and this opening, we have this and this opportunity, right? So the first thing to leverage that kind of access is to reach out to people that were exactly in your shoes, not too long ago.
So another thing I was curious to ask you too is how have you been personally able to leverage it? And you mentioned having like that realization of just like, okay, manufacturing isn't for me. Once you had that realization, did you necessarily right away, is it okay, business consulting is the solution, or how did you find out this is my alternative? And did Nesby play a part in that for you at all?
Nesby did play a big part in that. It didn't play a part in the finding of it, but it played a part in the, helping me experience it. So after I realized that, like manufacturing is too static for me, I want something that's changing. I was honestly just scrolling through LinkedIn and I was just looking, like the random jobs that people do, and then I was noticing that, the ones that are in consulting, they have projects that usually last like 2 to 3 weeks or 4 weeks, so it's really short. They do the project, they finish it, and then they start a whole new thing. And a lot of times in like different locations and stuff. So I really like that. That's really different. That's a different challenge for me. And I like that. So with that, I began to look more into like consulting and like the opportunities that are within it. And then the part that Nesby played in is that, easily like it was gonna be the, one of the conferences that was right after my internship. I was like, all right, these are the companies that are gonna come. These are the ones that have consulting type roles, and then like simple searches on LinkedIn with like the hashtag like SB45 or whatever, you can literally find the list of the recruiters that are gonna attend, right? And I always say this to my members, like it's about who now, like the cliche saying, who you know now,
Of
what you know, yeah. And so when it comes to like going to a conference or anywhere really, like to know someone, like the standard for knowing someone, if there's just like one like message back to back on LinkedIn, like you become like that someone when you go to the conferences, because the other people are people that they've just never talked to before. So even if you have just like a one like message exchange, you and a recruiter, for example, like that's it. You know that person, and like you can leverage that. Like when you pull up the conference, be like, hey, like it's so and so, and we talked a little bit on LinkedIn. They can be like, yeah, like, I remember that. And then you know them. Like that's all it takes. Yeah.
Really huge when it comes to doing that. Did you do that when you were looking for like a role at Goldman Sachs at all?
Goldman Sachs was a little bit different. Goldman Sachs, I wasn't interested in Goldman Sachs, but we had an event. We had an event at the business college. It's called Black in Business. And then there was this guy, his name is Kevin. And Kevin graduated like maybe 4 years before I met him. I met him last year. So I met him at this event, and he was a cool guy. And we talked, we chopped it up, and he worked at Goldman Sachs, right? And then so he just became like a mentor figure for me. He'd check in, I'd ask him about things, stuff like that. It was just a casual relationship, and I would talk to him about it. And then when the summer came, last summer in July, they were about to open up the applications for Goldman Sachs. And he was like, yo, you should apply. And then I was like, I'm not that interested, but you know what, like I'm gonna do it anyways. Why not? Like I'm gonna do it. So I applied anyway. And I'll admit I didn't do it right away. At first I was like, I'm not interested. So I was like, I'm not gonna do it. But he was like, no, you should apply. He's like, did you apply yet? Did you apply yet? And then I was like, okay, this guy has been a great mentor for me. Like he's helped me a lot. So I'm gonna go ahead and apply, right? And I'll be very honest. I kind of do it for his sake. I was interested like a little bit, but I did do it for his sake. And then later last year, I went to the Forbes Summit. And Forbes Summit, so at that time I had just finished an internship and it was consulting.
What's
And I
that
did,
event like?
it's different. It's not like a conference. It's kind of more like a party, honestly. So first of all, people don't dress professional, right? People will go dressed in all types of everything, right? Like it's very individualistic. And you do have a lot of people from the fashion industry that were there, so they obviously didn't want to wear like a conventional, like three piece. They want to like,
You froze up for a little bit. At least on my end, it shows you froze up. Can you repeat the that just like that last 15 seconds real quick? Hello, can you hear me?
Damn, I forgot what we were talking about.
We just had a brief intermission or cut out for a bit, but what we were talking about was I was asking you about how you were able to transition from manufacturing to business, and you're telling me with this story about how you got to Goldman Sachs, and from there you brought up
Oh, the
the
Forbes Summit.
Forbes conference, and I just wanted to I was curious to go deeper into that, but I guess I'm gonna let you finish your story about how you got to Goldman Sachs, and then let's come back to that component right there.
Okay. All right. So yeah, so Goldman Sachs, I wasn't really interested. I was interested a little bit, but I really just applied for his sake. And then so I did that, and I went to the Forbes Summit, and I was exploring like other jobs, and I was fresh out of consulting internship, and I knew what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it. And so at the Forbes Summit, I was just exposed to a lot of different jobs that you wouldn't see anywhere. So people were just doing some really interesting things. And then I met some folks that do venture capital, right? And like instantly I was like, wow, what you do, like it sounds so cool, right? They're basically like their job is like Shark Tank, right? Like they will meet people, they will decide if they want to invest in them, take a percentage of their company, and then they go on to the next one. So I was like, wow, that like that's pretty cool, right? And they're always traveling, finding the next big idea, da, 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 and they just invest in it. And that's why they were actually at the summit, because they're probably meeting with some young folks that, have a startup idea coming or something like that. And that was their job. And I was like, yes, I want to do that. Like, how did you guys get started? And it turns out that the founder of it, the founder from this venture capital company that I was talking to, that he actually started in like finance and like investing and stuff like that with the same internship that I was applying for at Goldman Sachs, right? I was like, wow, like that's crazy how things work. Like it was the same exact internship, right? And like I've had this great connect that has been for like the longest time, was like, bro, like you should apply for this, you should go for it. And then seeing the guy, he was like, yeah, like I started this internship. I messaged him later. I was like, did you actually like was that internship? Like he was like, yes, that's how it started. He was like, that's definitely how it started. And it was the exact same position, like same location, everything, right? So I was
That
like,
pays out.
yeah, I was like, wow, that is really crazy how things turn out. And it was actually the next day after I met them at the Forbes Summit that my online interview was for it. So they have like an initial like online interview. And it was the next day, and I wasn't really like, I'm usually not the type to prepare too much for interviews because I do like it to be, you know, more casual and relaxed. But I was not worried about it at all. I was like, you know, I'm just gonna do this interview and like what happens, happens, right? And then after that, I was like, dang, okay, you know, I need to like deep that this is this could be like a big deal for me. And then I went through the interview, you know, with that in mind. Yeah, I think I definitely did a lot better than I would have done it if I was like, you know, I'm applying for the sake of this guy. And then I was like, wow, like I'm applying for something that could start this job that I think that I have finally, you know, after so long, after so many experiences, that I finally like narrowed in and focused on exactly what I want to do.
So what exactly is the role that you're referring to?
The role that I'm referring to.
Yeah, the role of Goldman Sachs.
Oh, it's investment management.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that, what that means?
Okay, investment management. So basically, it'll be so there's two types. So there's like there's investment banking and then there's investment bank management. Investment banking is basically companies, you know, that want to invest, want to expand, want to buy other companies and stuff like that. That's investment banking. And then investment management is basically the same thing but with individuals, right? So it'll be wealthy individuals, you know, that will come to the company, like they have this money. And they either want to preserve it for like generations for the next generations, or they either want to grow it and you help them do that. So they will come to you with like their money and then you invest it for them on their behalf.
Let's say somebody's listening to this right now and like maybe they're having that same moment and they're like, wow, that sounds really cool. Like that's a really cool job. How do I get into that? Like as an undergrad that's just starting out, what things would you recommend that they educate themselves on and where are some like good resources to kind of check out to do that?
Okay, yeah. I would say when you have networking events or, you know, any event or any opportunity, even if it's just for fun, even if it's like something casual, you know, like a mixer or like a brunch or dinner or anything like that, I would say show up. You know, you never know what you're gonna learn and what you're gonna meet, right? At the time when I met the person that helped me get into Goldman Sachs, when I met Kevin, I wasn't very interested in business at the time. You know, I was still like very close to my like conventional engineering route, and I didn't really have much of a reason to go, but I just went just to go. You know, so I would just say just show up, show up. You know, like
Yeah.
whatever you can, just show up because you really do not know where knowledge is going to come from, where opportunities are going to come from, and you know, a lot of people know this on campus, but I do show up to a lot of things, like. And it's not going to be like, you know, you don't go with the mentality of showing up that like, okay, you know, this event, I'm going to show up and like something's going to happen for me, right? Because if it doesn't happen, then you're going to be pretty bummed down. You might be discouraged to do more things in the future. But just go with like a positive attitude that, you know, you're going to go and like if you don't get anything from it, you'll probably get a meal, you know, you'll probably get some good conversations. You'll probably get a change of setting, a change of scene. And
What would you say is a good number of people to talk to each like event you're attending? Like if you're just showing up and like not talking to anyone, that really doesn't help. But for you, like you know, I know for you, you're very social, you're very like personable and good at talking to people. But for someone that like let's say is more of an introverted and they kind of really have to push themselves and set that goal, what would be a good goal set for them to be like talk to at least this many people before you leave?
So I'm gonna say that, you know, if you show up, like I'm very happy with you, right? Like you really like like, you know, like some applause for you, like you've showed up, like that's pretty much you've done like really good to yourself, right? And then when it gets to come to talking to people, I would advise against having a quota or a number of people that you want to talk to. Because that just comes out as forced conversation, right? And forced conversation is not going to be fun for you or the other person, right? Forced conversation, it can lead to something, but usually, you know, it's just forced conversation. It feels unnatural. I would say when you talk to people that you're interested in. You know, talk to people that you think they have something to offer, or you know, even if they're just nice or you think they're cool, like they have a good personality, talk to them for your own benefit. You know, and talk to them like. I don't know what to say, but just talk to people that you feel like you naturally gravitate towards, because that will help a lot.
Definitely. Out of curiosity, you mentioned showing up and attending conferences. Outside of that, are there any resources that you might know of that someone might be able to utilize to kind of like maybe not just get in, but maybe just educate themselves more on the topic?
Resources to educate themselves more. I'm not sure because I don't think I've done any resources that educate. I think you know, learning how to like connect and learning how to like leverage connections and stuff like that. This came with practice, right? When you show up to a lot of events and you show up to a lot of Nesby meetings, you know, in Nesby, like we have people from the professional chapters, they come and talk to us about what worked for them. You start to learn and you learn by experience. You know, I'm sure they do have some resources out there. I personally just haven't used any.
I want to now go kind of backtrack a little bit to the Forbes Under 30 summit you were talking about. For the summit, you might give it like a quick kind of like overbrief of what it entailed, but can you do that one more time? Just tell us how does someone kind of get into that summit, as well as what does the summit actually entail?
Okay, so I didn't know a lot about the summit, right? I mean, I was just seeing people online that were like posting about it. They were like, you know, like I just got, you know, accepted for like Forbes Under 30 Scholar, and I was like, oh, you know, like that's pretty neat. And I never really thought about, you know, pursuing it or anything. And that continued on for a long time. And I was actually pretty late in getting involved in that process. I was very, very late. And I would say part of it is that I just didn't know a lot about it. And then the other part of it was that I just didn't think that, you know, I would be able to participate in such a thing in terms of capability, right? Like I doubted myself. I was like, wow, like these are pretty amazing people, you know, that are getting involved with this. And I didn't think much about it, right? It wasn't until Al Hadi, who is my vice president, SB, he was like, bro, you should apply. He's like, you should apply, you should apply. And then I was like, how did that process even go? He's like, I have the link. And he's like, I just texted you the link. And then I was like, okay, so how does this work? And I think it was that you can nominate someone for it, and you can even nominate yourself. So Al Hadi, like, he took care of that for me, right? And then they sent me the application link. And then the application link was a bunch of essays, right? Like, you know, like leadership, talking about stuff like that. And I think it took me like 25, maybe 30 minutes in between classes for me to fill that out. So it didn't take very long, and I will admit it was just because of like I just didn't think that I had a shot, so I just did it really quickly and just to say that I did it, right? Just to feel good that like, you know, I did it, you know, in like full spirit of showing up. I was like, okay, like I'm gonna do it, and then I'm gonna send it. You know, done is better than perfect. And then I think the way it goes, I got a little bit lucky in that they want to have diversity in schools of the people that attend, and I don't think a lot of people from Iowa applied. So I had lots better chances than from people that, you know, like they already had a lot of people from their schools apply. And then so yeah, so like just a little bit before the summit, they emailed me. They were like, hey, like you got accepted for a Under 30 Scholar. And basically what that offers you is so the summit, you can buy a ticket to the summit. It's pretty expensive. I think it's like $600 or something like that. So you can actually pay for your way in, which, you know, kind of takes a little bit away from its value, but at the same time I was grateful, right? So what they offer you as an Under 30 Scholar is free admission to the summit, and then they give you access to some lounges and areas where you can meet people and kick it with. And then they actually did not offer transportation and the hotel expenses. These were when like students get those, the schools were like, hey, like we'll pay for your lodging and for your transportation. So University of Iowa actually covered that for me. They were like, okay, we'll take care of like your hotel and transportation. So everything gets covered. And it was like that for most people. They like, the school was like, they wanted to boast about it, so they were like, hey, like we're gonna help you get there. So then I went and I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was gonna be like a lesbian career fair, like everyone's gonna be suited up, and then you'll have speakers and stuff like that. It was not like that at all, right? Like it was just like a big old party. And it was very different because like, yeah, like you have people from like the music industry, the fashion industry, like the cannabis industry, and like they were giving out samples, right? So it was definitely like it was a really different type of setting that the people were in. And then you even had like they had like free drinks and stuff like that. So it was a completely different vibe. And everyone was doing their own thing. And that was the fun part about it, is that it was very individualistic and experience, and everyone had different interests. And the people that do, like they're very individualistic, and then they really claim it. Like they really embody, like what they want and who they want to be. And that's what made it really cool. That's what made it a really cool experience.
Who were the some of the people that kind of attend the conference for that time?
For that time, they had so the people that are more popular, it would be a little bit more crowded, but they were still there. So there was on the top of my head, there was like Kevin Durant, there was Quavo, 21 Savage, there were some rappers there. There was Serena Williams, that was a big one. There's some random ones like Ray J, I think, was there.
What was the favorite? What was your favorite? Not, I guess I was gonna say breakout session, but I was gonna say that's very different. As we, what was your favorite moment from the summit?
My favorite moment from it, not sure. There was a lot of favorite moments. I would say my favorite moments were definitely with the people that I met there. Like it wasn't from the speakers, it was more from the other scholars, because we really did form a good relationship with each other. And it was a long summit. Like we were there for a few days. We were all staying together, spending the whole day, and exploring. It was in Detroit. We were like exploring the city, like eating out in different places, and like it was a lot of us all over the city. Like you'll run into them everywhere. So that was definitely a lot of fun.
Today now, when folks kind of like see you, they see, like, wow, like he just has internship experience. He's an engineer. He's a Forbes under 30 scholar. But like, I was kind of curious to ask you, like, that's something that takes a lot of work to do. Like, this is not something that happened overnight for you. So out of curiosity, just wanted to ask you, just throughout your kind of just journey, what were some of the challenges you faced? Like, what was your biggest piece of adversity or like biggest failure, and what'd you learn from it?
Oh man, imposter syndrome. I still deal with this today, right? Like so in about a month or two, I'm gonna start my internship for Goldman Sachs. And even right now, I feel like, man, I'm not sure if I'm like deserving of it. If I was so I've met a lot of the other people that are gonna be doing this job, and like they're like amazing. Like, they do a lot of things. And so, I get hit with imposter syndrome, like, man, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do that. Like, I'm not even that good with my own personal finances. Like, how am I supposed to handle somebody else's? But everyone goes through that. You just have to realize that this is a common feeling, and you have to conquer it, and really believe in yourself. And that takes some time. And I don't think you can ever fully get rid of it. I think it's just our human nature to compare ourselves to others and always feel like we're, lagging a little bit behind them. But yeah, don't let that hold you back, because if you feel that way, then you're not going to show up to things, right? If I felt that way, I would have never applied to the Forbes Under 30 Summit, for example, right? And even when I did apply, like I was kind of embarrassed after I got it, because I was like, I didn't put my best effort into getting it. Like, yes, I got it, but like I was so hesitant about applying and doubting my capability that I applied like on a rush, and I could have even done better, and I could have had like more solidified it. So don't let the imposter syndrome hold you back.
That's real. What would you kind of say for, let's say, for those that like I personally, yeah, I've dealt with that too for sure. What advice would you have for folks that necessarily do deal with that, and like What have you kind of implemented that's worked for you? Because everyone's different, but what has worked for you to kind of combat that feeling?
So everyone has that feeling, and we all have different ways to deal with it. But I found that, if you try to show to others that you are not feeling it, that you are not having imposter syndrome, and that you are confident, but on the inside, you're feeling something different, that doesn't tend to work, right? But if you open up a little bit more and you are a little bit more vulnerable, and I mean, like, you can do this in like any setting. Like, if you have an interview, you obviously want to seem like, you're confident, you know what you're doing, da, da, da. But during my Goldman Sachs interview, like, it was a very tough interview, and they ask you questions that are really hard, right? I thought about it, and I could have tried to answer them, as best as I can, but I actually shared a little bit of vulnerability, like, hey, like some of these stuff I don't know about, just because I am an engineering major versus other people that are applying who are a business major. So I don't know about that, but if you tell me about it right now, I will learn it, and I will internalize it. And they actually really like that. They're like, you know what, like, yes, you're open to learning, you're not closed out because of that lack of, confidence. So I think dealing with it openly, with accountability and vulnerability, is a lot better than just closing it out. And saying like, then either like retracting, saying like, I can't be in this space because I feel like people are doing much better than I am, is also just as bad as being in that space and being like, yeah, like I'm just as good, and like I know it all, when you really don't, when you're really like shaking up on it. So having a little bit of vulnerability can help you learn and then, overcome it.
And showing vulnerability too is not necessarily the easiest thing to do, and it actually takes courage because in our society today it's something that's not talked about too much, and most folks are kind of scared to be vulnerable because they might, rather than seeing it as like it's okay to be honest, some people might view it as like this is kind of me showing weakness necessarily, right? And especially like as men, it's even worse. Like there's a lot of folks that deal with depression because of that. They're so scared to their vulnerability because they might feel like, oh, I might be attacked and seen as weak. But for folks that kind of view that way, what would you just say someone like that necessarily?
I would say that, a lot of people see vulnerability as weakness, but in reality, vulnerability is growth, right? When you are vulnerable, you allow yourself to grow. You allow yourself to seek help, right? And when you seek help, you learn, right? You get mentorships, you get people that support you. So vulnerability is growth, right? It is not weakness. Weakness is not being able to grow.
Facts. Gems right there. Also, it's something I want to talk about too. It's kind of relates to vulnerability, but international experiences. A lot of folks, when it comes to travel today, aren't necessarily always as seeking of travel experiences today. But you're someone that's, mashallah, you've traveled to a lot of places. Out of curiosity, what's kind of been your most impactful international experience?
That's a really rough question, and I get it a lot. People are like, what's your favorite place? Or like, what was your best experience? But they're all really different, right? It's kind of like choosing between children. But
Yeah, where were some of the most impactful? Not necessarily saying this one's the best or the worst, but
the most
we were
impactful.
like, yeah.
Okay. When I was during my time in California, I had a friend. His name is Kane, and he was a Japanese international student. And we became really close, like he's my friend. And then last summer, I actually got to visit him in Tokyo and stay with his family for about a week. And that was a good experience. That was a very good experience.
What has a travel kind of taught you? Are there any like certain lessons you've learned from just traveling?
I think when you travel, and we travel to see the differences in cultures, the differences in places and locations, but the similarities are also really interesting. Like, these are things that are just shared human experience. These are things that we all feel, right? And when you feel like you can relate to that, you just feel a lot more belonging, like, with your place in the world and like where you are as a person. You just see that, these are shared experiences. These are similar feelings that are like universal, and it's really cool to have that.
Do you believe travel adds value to a personal to a person's like personal development? And if so, how would you say it adds value?
Yes, most definitely. It adds a lot of value. I think when you gain that kind of culture and like you yourself, like from every culture, you know, they have their good things and they have their, you know, their shortcomings, right? Like if I'm talking about my upbringing from Sudan, like the good things were that, you know, we're really social, like we're really spontaneous, so we're good. We like to stay on our toes, stuff like that, but we lack a discipline. But here, when you come to the US, like there's more discipline, people are a little bit more scheduled and stuff like that, but you lack in things like you know, like the country is so huge that like families get separated, right? So there are some things
As
that,
much relationship maintenance.
as much relationship, right? And people like really prioritize a career that they would like, you know, leave their family, stay in misery, you know. Or like there's like credit, you know, like the credit cycle and like a lot of people are in debt, stuff like that. So there are goods and bads from each culture. And then when you travel, you know, you don't have to take that, right? You know, you can just leave that off to the side and you can try to learn from the good that comes from it. And then you know, and like that's something that I'm very active about. It's not something that you go and like, you know, naturally you're just gonna absorb. Like you have to have that intention that when you go, like the things that you like, you carry with you, right? You keep within you. And you know, the things that you don't like, you just don't pay no mind to.
Towards the beginning of the interview, one thing you mentioned is when you kind of set goals, you necessarily kind of start with a wide scope and kind of know where you're in. Today, what goal are you working towards, and where are you kind of now in that journey?
So I still want to be in venture capital. I think I've narrowed that pretty good. That's the job I want. I mean, eventually I want to be an angel investor, which is basically just like, you know, like Shark Tank is the easy way to explain it to people. That, you know, people will come present to you and then you can invest, take equity in what they're making. But that is hard and that does take a while to build something like that. But I will start with venture capital and steps that I'm taking. I'm reading a book about it. I am using Goldman Sachs as a stepping stone for now. Hopefully, you know, the way the economy goes, I might step on it a little longer. But yeah, I'm using that as a stepping stone. And then that also allows me more access, right? Like I'm able to talk to more people that work there and connect with them. I am staying in contact with the people that I met at the Forbes Summit. You know, I'm always talking to them. I'm like, hey, like, you know, we're in quarantine. Like, I have this time. What should I be doing? And that really helps. It really helped me take a lot of steps. I like to keep a lot of mentors. It can be overwhelming, you know, to keep track with all of that. But when you're genuinely interested in the relationship and the opportunities that you can, you know, that you can get from learning from them, it becomes a little easier to follow up.
What does success mean to you? Some people might
Thank
necessarily
you.
say success to them is about, it could be a financial success, like necessarily starting out or ending up at a point that was higher than you started out financially. For some, that might just be doing better than their parents financially. For some, it might mean, happiness or somewhere in a mixture of both. But for you, how do you personally define success?
How do I personally find it? I would say success to me, it means financial freedom, right? Like getting financial freedom is what I want, and passing the knowledge for someone else to reach financial freedom, I think that's what it means to be successful. That having financial freedom and then having the ability to pass it on to other people, I think that is what really defines success for me. And financial freedom doesn't mean that I'm like, you know, wealthy or like filthy rich or anything. That doesn't matter. Financial freedom just means that I don't have to worry about anything financial ever again. That's what financial freedom means to me. And
Ask, so what resource and support systems are you using to kind of help yourself reach that definition of success? You mentioned kind of pursuing venture capital and using your network as well as having mentors, and you mentioned also reading. What are you reading? Are there any other resources you'd kind of add on or anything else that you're utilizing to achieve that success?
yeah, so I'm not the biggest reader, to be honest. I usually just, you know, if I'm reading, I'm reading for my own amusement. But what I am reading now, it's not something very general. It is directly like VC stuff. Like it is 100% about VC. So if you are interested in that, I'm reading VC deals. You know, if you're interested in business or venture capital or like the startup space, VC deals is a very good book. It lays down foundation, it's very foundational. But yeah, that's what I am reading. And but really, it's your network. Yeah, you want to reach out to those people because it's so much easier to learn from people than it is to start by yourself, right? Because people make mistakes, and you know, like I make mistakes, you're probably going to make mistakes too. But you know, try to have less mistakes by learning from others' mistakes. Like if someone went through it, don't go through it again, right? Like try to adapt to that. And you know, people usually don't want their mistakes to be repeated by someone else. So they will share and tell you. They're like, hey, like I did this mistake this here and there. Like don't fall in the same mistake.
Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self?
What advice would I give to my younger self? I wouldn't want to change the past. I don't think I would want to change the past at all. Like Alhamdulillah, it's been pretty good. I wouldn't want to change the past. So the only thing I would give to myself is that you know, like be more in the present and be more in the moment, like soak it up more. Like be mindful of what you have going on right now. Be mindful of where you were and where you're going. And just really absorb it, like really be in the moment, you know, for the good and the bad, you know, because when you're in there for the good, that increases your happiness, that increases your fulfillment, your satisfaction, you know, and when you're really there in the moment, being mindful of the bad, you know, that's when you start to adapt and that's when you start to grow and that's when you start to learn. So I would just say like be more mindful of where you are right now, you know, soak it up more.
Great advice. And I know I asked you this a little bit earlier, but it's going to be the last question unless you have an answer to it. But out of everything we talked to today, is there any questions you, if you were in my position, is there any other questions you have asked yourself or maybe kind of topics you would go deeper into?
I would have asked myself. I'm trying to think of things that, you know, have made me the person I am that are, you know, outside, yeah, that are, you know, outside of those things. But I would just expand on, you know, we talked about how if you go to like a new country or a new culture, you try to absorb the good and you know, you try to leave the bad. That can be applied in a little bit more broader spectrum that like, for example, like there's parents. Right, and I have my parents, right, and you know the generational gap between me and my parents is very huge, not because of the age, you know, the age difference is pretty normal between, you know, like a child and a parent, but because my parents were raised in Sudan, right, and they were raised like in Sudan back in the day, it's very much different than me like coming to America and trying to do that. So a lot of times they will be trying to give me, you know, like maybe trying to give me like see how, right, they try to give you tips and lessons and stuff like that, just, you know, apparently things. But a lot of times I would find that it doesn't apply. I'd be like, you know, like thanks for the tip, but you know, this doesn't really apply to me. But there's always going to be
Here's
something
some
there.
examples of that, or like where some of those common challenges you see, like what are examples?
Some common challenges. The first time I got an internship, it was actually a co-op, so I had to take a semester off. So I was like, you know, hey fam, you know, I'm not about to be in school this semester. I'm going to be working. They were like, what? Like school? They were like, no, we did not move all the way across the world for you to leave school. Like, we are here for you to graduate. And, you know, like, you know, I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. You know, like, this is going to help me a lot more. And so there are things like that, you know, that you just feel like it doesn't apply. But there's always reason why they say that, right? There's always, like, there's some merit behind it. So I would say don't dismiss it right away, but try to, you know, absorb what's good from it, right? You know, like they're not necessarily saying like don't progress yourself by taking this co-op. They're saying like, hey, like knowledge is important, like you want to learn, like so instead of saying, you know, no, like, you know, school is not everything, I would say like yes, like you want me to go to school to learn or like gain knowledge, and I will do that. Like I will exactly do that still, right, as I continue on this other route.
Yeah, that yeah, it makes it sometimes for me personally, there's been moments where it's kind of been hard to even like relate to the parents. Like particularly for me, like for the whole journey of just Yani leaving Sudan and just hitting a whole restart button on life. Like, you know, we it's very common that we'll see people in the Sunni community that like were previously engineers or doctors and come down here and now they're working a completely different profession. And are not making, you know, the same amount as they do. Would you ever have moments where like you felt like, although you get their struggle a little bit, did you ever have moments where you didn't necessarily feel like you could relate there, and it made you kind of made it just even more challenging to communicate?
All the time, yeah, all the time. That it makes it hard to communicate. I think definitely the biggest one was like the co-op thing, was the fact that I was gonna leave school to work. It just sounded kind of ludicrous to them. As soon as they start seeing that you are progressing for real and you show it to them, that like they start trusting you more. But yeah, it was challenging for them. To have that, like kind of autonomous trust in the beginning, early on, just because that there's so much riding on it, right? There's so much like they're like, yes, like we sacrificed a lot, like we left all of, like the life that we had, so now we hit this reset button. So there's a lot riding on it, so it kind of does get the tensions going a little bit, and that's what makes it really difficult. But as soon as you start progressing and you show that progress, it will kind of like let go a little bit and be fine with it.
I'd say that when we're just referencing the gap as a whole, for me personally, I kind of felt like it was the largest kind of growing up. And that's, I think that's kind of the most important time for a kid, because that's like when you kind of get the most lessons from your parents. But were you ever, how are you able to work towards like kind of, closing the gap? And are there any things in particular that kind of help you bridge that gap in any way?
Yeah, I mean, my experience is a little bit different just because, when I had that gap, it took a little bit longer because I was in Sudan up until I was, almost 14. So until that time, I didn't experience it, right? Like the things they would tell me were very applicable to me in Sudan, right? Like spot on. But it was until after coming here where I was like a little bit more grown up, that gap started to happen. But I would say focus on the shared experiences, right? We all have these human like experiences. We talked about travel, like there's some things that and feelings like that people experience regardless of where they are and what experience they do. So just try to focus on the same shared experiences. And that's whether with family or whether with anyone, right? Like there's always something that you relate on. And so to kind of build that trust and build that connection, you wanna make contact with like where you relate to them, and that shared experiences. So right, we all struggle in the same way and saying different things. We all deal with the same, mental challenges. We all deal with the same, physical challenges. So just try to relate on that.
That's great advice. Is there anything you want to add on to that particular component of just like the cultural gap, or just general advice you might have on to maybe younger folks that are kind of dealing with that? Outside maybe potentially relating is just.
Yeah, I would just say connect on the things for sure that you can relate on. Take it down to the basics of, human connection and try to tap on that.
And those are all the questions I have for today's interview. So thank you again, bro, for taking the time to do this interview. I
No
really
problem,
appreciate
bro.
it. It means a lot to me. So thank you so much.
Sure, man, no problem. It's a pleasure.
That'll be all for today's episode. And then inshallah, on the next episode, we're looking to interview Rudy, and he's going to be talking about starting a business in Korea.
All right.
Thank you, bro.